sure that we have to keep transforming ourselves to become who we ought to be. Once her estrogen level dropped, oxytocin, the connecting and tending hormone, also dropped. Instead of off-the-chart spikes, Sylvia's emotional, tending, and nursing impulses were dialed down to a dull, steady roar. There's a new reality brewing in Sylvia's brain, and it's a take-no-prisoners view. This has become the 21st century reality of ancient female brain wiring. This changed reality in Sylvia's brain is the foundation of her newly found balance. The brain's circuits don't change all that much in the mature female brain, but the high-test fuel, estrogen, that ignited them and pumped up the neurochemicals and oxytocin in the past has eased off. This biological truth is a powerful stimulus for the road ahead. One of the great mysteries to women at this age, and to the men around them, is how the changes in their hormones affect their thoughts, feelings, and the functioning of their brains. Perimenopause, the rocky beginning. A woman's hormones have been changing for several years before her day of menopause arrives. Starting at about age 43, the female brain becomes less sensitive to estrogen, touching off a cascade of symptoms that can vary from month to month and year to year, ranging from hot flashes and joint pain to anxiety and depression. Scientists now believe that menopause is triggered by this change in estrogen sensitivity in the brain itself. Sex drive can change radically, too. The level of estrogen drops, and so does that of testosterone, the rocket fuel for sex drive. The stability of the female brain's reality, in fact, can be an almost daily uncertainty by age 47 or 48. The 24 months before menopause, while the ovaries make erratic amounts of estrogen before stopping production of the hormone altogether, can be a rocky ride for some women. That's how Sylvia felt at age 47 when she called my clinic to make an appointment, the first time in her life she had seen a psychiatrist. It was the year before her last child left for college, and she had constant mood symptoms, including irritability, with emotional outbursts and a lack of joy or hope that had started to distress her. Perimenopause is like adolescence without the fun, she said one day. It's true. Your brain is at the mercy of changing hormones, as it was in puberty, with all the nerve-jangling psychological stress responsivity, worries about appearance, and over-the-top emotional responses. Sylvia would be fine one minute, but just the wrong comment from Robert could send her slamming doors throughout the house and taking refuge in the garage for an hour-long sob fest. She couldn't take it anymore and wanted me to prescribe something to treat her symptoms. The other issues with Robert would have to wait. So I gave her estrogen and an antidepressant. In 2 weeks, she was amazed at how much better she felt. Her brain needed the neurochemical support. For a lucky 15% of women, the perimenopause, the 2 to 9 years before menopause, is a breeze. But for about 30%, it can cause major discomfort. And 50 to 60% of women experience some perimenopausal symptoms at least some of the time. Unfortunately, there's no way to know how you'll react until you get there. There are some clear signs, however, when you've crossed the threshold. Your first hot flash, for one thing, is a signal that your brain's starting to experience estrogen withdrawal. Your hypothalamus, in response to decreased estrogen, has changed its heat-regulating cells, making you feel suddenly, blazingly hot, even at normal temperatures. Another sign of perimenopause is the shortening of your menstrual cycle by a day or two. even before you've experienced your first hot flash. The brain's response to glucose changes dramatically too, giving you energy surges and drops and cravings for sweets and carbs. This estrogen withdrawal affects the pituitary, curtailing the menstrual cycle and making the timing of ovulation and fertility unreliable. So be careful. Many women end up with a surprise change of life baby thanks to the breakdown in the predictability of their ovulation. I started the Women's Mood and Hormone Clinic long before I was in perimenopause or menopause, so all I personally had experienced was moderately bad PMS and postpartum hypothyroidism. But when I was in my mid-40s, I began to have extremely bad PMS, with high irritability and big mood drops. At first, I thought it was the stress of my job and having primary responsibility for my son. No doubt those realities played into my perimenopausal syndrome, but I resisted taking hormones for several years thinking, oh, this isn't the same thing I see in my patients every day. Boy, was I wrong. By the age of 47, I was in full-blown perimenopause. I couldn't sleep well, woke up hot, and often had to change my nightgown. In the morning, I felt like hell, tired, irritable, and ready to cry over anything. 2 weeks after starting estrogen and antidepressants, I miraculously felt like my old self again. Since estrogen also affects the brain's level of serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, and acetylcholine, all neurotransmitters that control mood and memory, it's no surprise that big changes in estrogen level can influence a wide variety of brain functions. This is where drugs such as antidepressants and other SSRIs can help, because they prop up these neurotransmitters in the brain. Studies show that perimenopausal women complain of more symptoms of all kinds, from depressed mood and sleeping problems to memory lapses and irritability, to their doctors than do women who have already passed through menopause. Interest, or the lack of it, in sex can be an issue as well. Along with the estrogen drop, testosterone, the fuel for love, can plummet at this time too. The woman's last gyno crisis. Marilyn and her husband Steve came to see me when Steve was at his wit's end from being rejected sexually by her. "She won't let me touch her anymore," he said. Marilyn told me, "I used to like sex a lot and would like to have that feeling again, but every time he touches me or gets that look in his eye, it's just irritating. It's not that I don't love him, I do." Husbands can feel dumbfounded. A man's hormones haven't abruptly changed, even though they will decrease, and gradually he, too, will have fewer sexual urges. But his brain will never go through the precipitous hormone decline a woman's brain has had to endure. It was a good thing they came in, since this was a biological problem that was quickly becoming a marital problem. Many women do experience a drop in libido, but I suspected Marilyn's perimenopausal situation was a little more extreme than most. I measured her testosterone and found that it was barely present. Could this be the cause of her rejection of Steve? She decided to find out by trying testosterone. So I prescribed the patch, and she slapped it on that very day. Although sexual response varies a great deal during these years of erratic hormones, 50% of women age 42 to 52 lose their interest in sex, are harder to arouse, and find their orgasms are much less frequent and intense. By the age of menopause, women have also lost up to 60% of the testosterone they had at age 20. But this can be replaced by many forms of testosterone supplements, such as patches, pills, and gels, that are now available. When I greeted Marilyn and Steve in the waiting room 2 weeks later, Steve gave me 2 thumbs up. Marilyn said that within a week she began to feel less annoyed at his sexual advances, and during the second week, she even felt like initiating sex herself, but didn't. Her brain circuits for sexual desire have been reignited by a little hormonal rocket fuel. Use it or lose it goes for everything, memory and sex included. The brain below the waist will shrivel up if it isn't used. Not all perimenopausal or postmenopausal women lose their testosterone or their sexual interest. In fact, postmenopausal zest is a phrase coined by the anthropologist Margaret Mead. It is a time when we no longer have to be concerned with birth control, PMS, painful cramps, or other monthly gynecological inconveniences. It is a stage of life that is free from many encumbrances and full of wonderful possibilities. We are still young enough to live life to its fullest and enjoy all the good things nature has provided us. Many women experience a renewed zest for life, even rejuvenated sexual desire, and look for exhilarating adventures or new beginnings. It is like starting life all over with a better set of rules. For those who don't have the zest, the testosterone patch may ignite it. By the time Sylvia decided to see me again about divorcing Robert, after he hadn't come to visit her much in the hospital, she had passed through the last throes of perimenopause and stopped taking the estrogen and antidepressant. It was then that Sylvia explained to me it felt as if a haze had lifted in her brain once her menstrual cycle had stopped. She had always suffered terribly from PMS. And now that that was over, it was as if her vision had become clearer about what she wanted to do with her life and what she didn't want to do any longer. She told Robert that although she still respected him, she had grown tired of demands that she continue to tend his needs on his timetable and keep up their large home. The monthly priming of her brain circuits by surging estrogen and oxytocin to assure that she would tend to the needs of others, was gone. Of course, she still had that blistering love for her children, but she didn't have their physical presence and their oxytocin-stimulating hugs or her estrogen pulses to trigger her caretaking circuits and behaviors anymore. Of course, she could still perform these duties, but she no longer felt driven to. She turned to Robert and said, "You're a grown-up, and I'm finished raising the kids. Now it's my turn to have a life." When her kids came home during a break from college, Sylvia reported that she really enjoyed seeing them and catching up on their lives, but was annoyed that they still expected her to pick up after them, cook their meals, and do their laundry. Her kids even teased her about how she would throw their laundry in the washer and dryer, but wouldn't match their socks anymore. She had laughed, too, but for the first time in her life, she blasted back a reply. "Do your own damn laundry. It's about time you grew up." The mommy brain was beginning to unplug. When a woman has launched all her children, her ancient mommy wiring comes loose, and she is allowed to pull a few of the connections to the child tracking device out of her brain. When the umbilical cord is cut as the children leave home, the mommy brain circuits are finally free to be applied to new ambitions, new thoughts, new ideas. Many women, however, may feel desperately sad and disoriented when their children first leave home. These circuits, which evolved for millions of years in our foremothers, fueled by estrogen and reinforced by oxytocin and dopamine, are now set free. This time of life for some women is not so rancorous as it was for Sylvia. My patient Lynn had a deep and loving marriage to Don for over 30 years by the time their 2 kids were on their own at college. Lynn and Don started to travel to the places they had always wanted to go. They felt a sense of satisfaction at having raised two wonderful and accomplished children. Lynn had enjoyed being a mother, but found that after a few months of heart tugs when they went off to college, she enjoyed not having to deal with the morning routine of getting the kids out the door. She was a successful and well-liked administrator at the university. Dawn was an engineer in private industry. The more time they spent alone, the more their relationship blossomed. They brought years of mutual love and trust to help them through this life transition and set up the new rules for the road ahead. Sylvia's midlife transition was not nearly so peaceful. By our next session, she had decided to go back to grad school and begin working in a mental health clinic 2 times a week. Her kids were a little unsettled by her new interests. The youngest was moving on and getting settled into life at college. She didn't need her mother as much as she used to, but still, she was surprised and a little hurt when she talked to Sylvia on the phone and all her mother wanted to tell her was about her own new projects and plans for going back to school herself. Sylvia told me that she almost found it shocking that she was no longer anxiously asking her daughter questions about her life. She was amazed at her slightly detached response. What's happening in her brain? It isn't just that the estrogen is gone. The physical sensations of tending and touching the children are also gone. Those sensations, along with estrogen, help to reinforce the tending circuits and turn up oxytocin in the brain. This process begins for most mothers during their children's teen years when they resist being hugged, kissed, or touched. So by the time they leave the nest, mothers have grown accustomed to less up-close and personal physical tending. An experiment on mothering behavior in rats found that physical contact is required to maintain the female brain circuits for active maternal behavior. Scientists numbed the chest, abdomen, and nipple area on the rats. The mothers could see, smell, and hear their pups, but could not feel them squirming around. The result? Mothering and bonding behaviors were severely impaired. The mothers didn't fetch, lick, and nurse their pups the way a normal rat mom would. Even though their brain circuits were organized and primed hormonally for mothering and caretaking behaviors, without the feedback of touch sensation, the mother rat's brain connections for nurturing behavior did not develop, and many of the pups died as a result. Human mothers also use this physical feedback to activate and maintain nurturing and caretaking brain circuits. The normal contact of living in the same house provides enough sensation to maintain a woman's tending and caretaking behaviors toward her kids, even grown-up kids. Once the kids leave the house, however, that's another story. If a mother is menopausal at the same time, the hormones that built, primed, and maintained those brain circuits are also gone. This change doesn't mean that the tending brain circuits are gone forever. 4 out of 5 women over 50 say having a job where they help others is important to them. Though the initial impulse for many menopausal women seems to be doing something for themselves for once, the renewal that follows often draws them back toward helping others. The caregiving circuits can easily be renewed. If an over 50-year-old woman becomes the mother of a new baby, the daily physical contact will cause those circuits to reemerge in her brain. As one of my female colleagues could tell you after she adopted a Chinese baby girl when she was 55 years old. So once the circuits are there, they can be reignited. It isn't over until it's over as far as the maternal female brain is concerned. For Sylvia, though, it was a golden time. In her reality, she was free at last to follow her own Pied Piper. She had taken on her own projects. Through her new courses, she had become convinced that behavioral problems in teens have their roots in early education, and she became passionate about improving how parents and teachers treat preschoolers. As part of getting her master's in social work, she became involved in training preschool teachers in the local school system. She told me that she had also returned to services at the church where she grew up and was building a studio in her garage so that she could go back to painting, an activity she had given up when she married Robert. At one of our sessions, she was almost in tears over how happy her new life was making her. She felt she was making a difference in the world. This was in direct contrast to the increasingly heated arguments that began the minute Robert walked in the door every night. "Who are you and what have you done with my wife?" Soon, Sylvia and Robert came to see me together for another couples session. Unresolved issues for both of them had finally come to a head. Robert couldn't believe what he was hearing. For instance, "Make your own damn dinner or go out by yourself. For the last time, I'm not hungry. I'm happy painting right now, and I don't feel like stopping." He said she had snapped at him at a party two nights before when she offered a suggestion about investing in a group of stocks, and he told her to stay out of the discussion because she didn't know what she was talking about. He was the one who read Barron's, after all. "Yeah, you keep reading it and you keep losing money. Have you seen my portfolio lately? I've made 3 times the amount you've made, so stop belittling me," she replied. Everything he said seemed to annoy her. She announced she was moving out. When Sylvia was younger, she would do everything she could to avoid fights with her husband, even if she was really mad. Remember the tape that gets rolling during the teen years, when estrogen dials up the emotions and communication circuits, the one that makes a woman panic about any conflict as a threat to a relationship? That tape doesn't stop rolling until a woman either consciously overrides it or the supply of hormones that fuels it is cut off, or both. A time like now. All her life, Sylvia had prided herself on being coy, accommodating, and willing to let her husband win, especially when he came home exhausted and on edge from the office. Her empathy for him was real. She kept the peace, as her Stone Age brain was compelling her to do, to keep the family together. Having a husband is good. We're better protected this way. These were the messages keeping her from engaging in conflict. If Robert forgot their anniversary, she would bite her tongue. If he was verbally abusive after a long day at work, she stared straight into the stew she was stirring and didn't respond. But as Sylvia hit menopause, the filters came off, her irritability increased, and her anger wasn't headed for that extra stomach anymore, to be chewed over before it came out. Her ratio of testosterone to estrogen was shifting, and her anger pathways were becoming more like a man's. The calming effects of progesterone and oxytocin weren't there to cool off the anger either. The couple had never learned to process and resolve their disagreements. Now Sylvia confronted Robert with regularity, venting decades of pent-up rage. At their next session, it became clear that it was not all Robert's fault. He was going through his own, more modest, life changes. But Sylvia still wanted to move out. Neither of them was yet aware of the changing reality in her brain, which was rewriting the rules not just for arguing, but for every interaction of their relationship. Studies show that women who are unhappy with their marriages report more negative moods and illnesses during the menopause years. So when the hormonal haze lifts and the children leave home, women often find themselves more unhappy than they could allow themselves to realize before. Often all the unhappiness gets blamed on the husband. Obviously, Sylvia had her legitimate complaints about Robert, but the root cause of her unhappiness was still unclear. The next week she reported that her daughter had said, "Mom, you're acting weird, and Dad is getting scared. He says you're just not the woman he's been married to for nearly 30 years, and he's afraid you'll do something crazy, like take all the money and run away." Sylvia wasn't crazy, and she wasn't going to abscond with their savings, but it was true. She wasn't the same woman. She told me that her husband once screamed at her, "What have you done with my wife?" A huge number of her brain circuits had been abruptly shut down, and just as abruptly, Sylvia had changed the rules of their relationship. As often happens in these situations, nobody told Robert. It is commonly believed that men leave their aging, chubby, postmenopausal wives for fertile, younger, thin women. This couldn't be further from the truth. Statistics show that more than 65% of divorces after the age of 50 are initiated by women. My suspicion is that much of this female-initiated divorce is rooted in the drastically altered reality of postmenopausal women. But as I have seen in my practice, it could also be because they are tired of putting up with difficult or cheating husbands and have just been waiting for the day when the children leave home. What had been important to women, connection, approval, children, and making sure the family stayed together, is no longer the first thing on their minds. And the changing chemistry of women's brains is responsible for the shifting reality of their lives. During any time when hormones are shifting and hijacking your reality, it's important to examine impulses and make sure they're real, as opposed to hormone-induced. Just as the drops in estrogen and progesterone before a period can make you believe you're fat, ugly, and worthless, the absence of reproductive hormones can make you believe your husband is the cause of all your misery. Maybe he is, and maybe he isn't. As Sylvia learned through our discussion, if you understand some of the biological reasons for your changing feelings and reality, you might just learn to talk about it with him, and he might just change. It's a long process of education, one that best begins before the change takes place. Who's cooking dinner? During our session after my August vacation, Sylvia told me that she had decided she wanted a divorce after all. As a matter of fact, she had moved out the month I was away. Her friends had even started setting her up with new men. It didn't take long before she was as annoyed with them as she was with Robert. Sylvia quickly discovered that older men were looking for a nurse with a purse, someone who had her own money and would take care of them for the rest of their lives. This was a bit shocking to her. It was just what she had been looking for in a man when she was young. Back then, she wanted someone who would take care of her and bring the money with him. Back then, she was willing to take care of him along with the children. Now, it was the last thing on her mind. Sylvia still felt hopeful that she would find the perfect man to grow old with, an equal partner, a soulmate, someone she could talk to and share life's joys with, but not do the physical caretaking, shopping, cooking, laundry, and cleaning that many of the men she was dating had come to expect of their ex-wives. As she put it, she had no intention of being a nurse, and she didn't want someone to steal her purse. Otherwise, she said, "I'd rather have no one right now." After all, she had lots of dear friends who made her happy. She was looking forward to a much less psychologically stressful existence than what she had been experiencing lately in arguing with Robert. This decreased urge to tend and nurture after menopause may not come as a relief to all women. Research has yet to examine the effects of low oxytocin, which ensues after estrogen declines, but it may lead to some real behavioral changes. Most women, however, are only vaguely aware of it, if at all. My patient Marcia, age 61, admitted to me, for example, that she was feeling much less concerned about the problems and needs of her family, friends, and children, and less inclined to look after them. Nobody had complained to her about this decreased caretaking, though her husband wondered why he'd been fixing his own dinner a lot. Mainly, it was just something Marcia noticed in herself. She didn't really mind her newfound emotional independence. She was spending more time on solo pleasures such as the genealogical research she loved to do. She had not had a menstrual period in over 4 years, but her vaginal dryness, night sweats, and interrupted sleep had led her to start being treated with estrogen pills. 3 months after she began estrogen therapy, however, Marcia's nurturing instincts had returned. She hadn't recognized how drastically they had changed over the past 4 years until they came flooding back. She told me she was shocked that one little pill could make her feel more like her old self, a self she only vaguely realized she had lost. Estrogen therapy may have stimulated her brain to produce higher levels of oxytocin again, triggering familiar, affiliative patterns of behavior. To her husband's relief. The last time a woman had a non-fluctuating stress responsivity because of steady, low hormones was in the juvenile pause, or during the months of pregnancy, when the pulsing cells of the hypothalamus are shut down and the stress response is kept low. After 10 years of no hormones, one of my postmenopausal patients reported to me that, although her sex drive was suffering, she and her husband had stopped fighting when they went on trips. It used to be that travel really stressed her out, but suddenly she was loving every minute of waking up early to catch a plane and going to unknown places. She even liked packing, and as the stress faded away, their travel fights had disappeared as well. As for Sylvia, soon after she moved out, she noticed that her mood swings and irritability stopped. She told me that her work with preschool teachers and parents had allowed her to become the person she always knew she ought to be. She began to look forward to the nights she spent alone, watching old movies, taking long bubble baths, and working late in her new studio. If her kids called, she was always eager to talk with them, but she found that she would not become as engaged in helping to solve their problems, getting upset, or giving them endless advice. At first, she thought the reason her moodiness and irritability had decreased was that she had gotten the biggest problem out of her life, her bad marriage. But she had also noticed that her hot flashes had almost disappeared and she was sleeping well again. When she came to see me 6 months after leaving Robert, I gently queried whether it was only that her husband was out of the house or whether it might also be that she had now settled into a new hormonal state in which her mood was steadier. Sylvia also mentioned that she was less irritable, and during this session she even complained about being lonely and having nobody with whom to discuss the events in her children's lives and her own. I suggested that she might be missing Robert's company and that if they started spending time together but negotiated a new set of rules, she might notice that their relationship was more balanced. Just getting started. At menopause, the female brain is nowhere near ready to retire. As a matter of fact, many women's lives are just hitting their peak. This can be an exciting intellectual time now that the burden of childrearing has decreased and the preoccupation of the mommy brain is lessened. The contribution of work to a woman's personality, identity, and fulfillment once again becomes as important as it may have been before the mommy brain took over. When Sylvia found out that she was accepted into a master's program in social work, it was one of the happiest days of her life. She hadn't had such a feeling of accomplishment since she graduated from college, got married, or had her children. As a matter of fact, work and accomplishment can be critical to a woman's sense of well-being during this life transition. Studies have shown that women with high career momentum at this stage of life viewed their work as more central to their identities than did women who were just maintaining or decreasing their career momentum. Also, women with high career momentum scored better on measures of self-acceptance, independence, and effective functioning in their 50s and 60s, and rated their physical health higher than did other women. There's a lot of life left after menopause, and embracing work, whatever that may be, passionately, clearly allows a woman to feel regenerated and fulfilled. Leave me alone already. Edith made an appointment with me as her husband, a psychiatrist, was winding down his practice in order to retire. Although they had a good relationship most of the time, all she could envision was that he would be constantly invading her space, demanding she serve him 24 hours a day. Her distress over the idea had given her insomnia. And she turned out to be right. The minute he was home, he started asking, "Where's lunch? Did you buy my salami? Who moved my toolbox? Aren't you going to clean up the dishes? They've been sitting in the sink for an hour." When she hadn't gone shopping because she was busy, he said, "Busy with what?" She had been helping her mother's oldest friend with things around the house. She had been taking care of her grandchildren on Tuesdays. She had a regular bridge game and lunch dates, and she attended a book club. She was busy working at the things that mattered to her. She liked her freedom. Her husband was dumbfounded that she showed little interest in him and had so much of her own life to live. This change in behavior is actually the most common one I see in women 65 and older. Like Edith, they come into my office depressed, anxious, and unable to sleep. I soon find out that their husbands have retired over the past year. They feel conflicted, angry, and pulled away from their own work and activities. They don't want to live this way for the rest of their lives. This fear of losing freedom can happen even if the marriage relationship is basically good. Somehow, many women feel that they cannot renegotiate the unwritten marriage contract. "Of course you can," I tell them. "Your life depends on it." Weeks later, after Edith and her husband had been on a month's vacation, she returned to see me. A pleased grin on her face, she said, "Mission accomplished. He has agreed to keep out of my hair." They had renegotiated the rules for the next phase of their life. Hormones in the female brain after menopause. Hormones in the brain are part of what makes us women. They are the fuels that activate our sex-specific brain circuits, resulting in female-typical behavior and skills. What happens to our female brains at menopause when we lose this hormonal fuel? The brain cells, circuits, and neurochemicals that have relied on estrogen soon shrivel. In Canada, the researcher Barbara Sherwin found that women who had estrogen replacement therapy right after the removal of their ovaries retained the memory function they'd had before. But women who had no estrogen replacement right after their ovaries were removed had declining verbal memory unless they were soon given estrogen. The therapy restored their memory to nearly premenopausal levels, but only if they began it immediately or soon after the operation. There's a brief window, it seems, when estrogen provides maximum protective benefits for the brain. Estrogen may have a protective effect on many aspects of brain functioning, even on the mitochondria, energy centers of cells, especially those in blood vessels in the brain. Researchers at the University of California, Irvine, found that estrogen treatment increased the efficiency of these mitochondria, perhaps explaining why premenopausal women have lower rates of stroke than men their age. Estrogen can help the brain's blood flow stay strong for years into older age. At Yale University, for instance, researchers treated postmenopausal women with estrogen or a placebo for 21 days, then scanned their brains while they performed memory tasks. The women on estrogen had brain patterns characteristic of younger subjects, while those without estrogen had brain patterns typical of much older women. And yet another study of brain volume in postmenopausal women suggested that estrogen protects specific parts of the brain. In women who took estrogen, there was less shrinkage in the brain areas for decision-making, judgment, concentration, verbal processing, listening skills, and emotional processing. The protective effect estrogen appears to have on female brain function is one reason scientists are carefully reconsidering the results of the Women's Health Initiative in 2002, a study that found that women who started taking estrogen after a 13-year gap didn't get its protective effects on the brain. Scientists have now shown that a gap of more than 5 or 6 years after menopause without estrogen means that the opportunity to reap estrogen's preventative effects on the heart, brain, and blood vessels is likely gone. Early treatment with estrogen may be especially important to protect brain function as well. Many women have felt confused and betrayed by the fact that they were told one thing a few years ago by their doctors about hormone replacement therapy, HRT, now called HT, but now hear the opposite based on the results of the Women's Health Initiative study. I myself, as both a doctor and a postmenopausal woman, have been caught in that bind. How and when to start hormone therapy and when and if to stop remain burning questions for patients and doctors alike. Until new studies clarify this issue, however, each patient must find her own way, using diet, hormones, activities, exercise, appropriate treatment, and regular input from informed doctors who are specialists in hormone therapy. I now have a complete discussion with each of my menopausal patients about her family genetics, lifestyle, symptoms, health issues, and the risks and benefits of hormone therapy for her. Despite the storms and hormonal adjustments of menopause, most women stay remarkably vigorous, smart, and capable as they age, even without the assistance of estrogen. Not all women need or want hormone therapy. It's usually not until decades after menopause that the natural process of aging starts affecting the functioning of the female brain. Men's and women's brains age differently, with men losing more of the cortex sooner than women. While every woman's body and brain react differently in the years after menopause, for many this is a time of increasing freedom and control over our lives. Impulses are less likely to confuse or agitate us. Our survival may no longer depend on a steady paycheck, and there's less value in pretending about how we feel, and more in presenting and living our passionate, real selves. Helping others and being engaged in solving serious problems in the world can energize us. This is also a time when grandmothering can bring new, often uncomplicated joy. Maybe life does save some of the best for last. My 60-year-old patient Denise, for example, had always been an independent woman focused on her marketing career, even while she was raising her two children. When her daughter gave birth for the first time, Denise was unprepared, she told me, for the waves of love she felt for her grandchild. I was completely swept off my feet, she said, which I never, ever expected. I've got a million things going on in my life, but for some reason, I can't get enough of this baby. And my daughter's letting me into her life in a way that she never has before. She needs me now, and I want to be there for her. The special supportive role that grandmothers play may be one of the reasons that evolution engineered women to live for decades after they can no longer bear children. Grandmothers, according to the University of Utah anthropologist Kristen Hawkes, may actually be one of the keys to growth and survival in ancient human populations. Hawkes argues that in the Stone Age, the extra food-gathering efforts of able-bodied postmenopausal women increased the survival rate of young grandchildren. Grandmothers' provisioning and help also enabled younger women to produce more children at shorter intervals, increasing the population's fertility and reproductive success. Even though the lifespan in hunter-gathering societies is typically less than 40, about a third of all adult women survive past that age, and many go on to live productively into their 60s and 70s. Among the Hadza hunter-gatherer population in Tanzania, Hawkes found, for example, that hard-working grandmothers in their 60s spent more time foraging than did younger mothers, providing food for their grandchildren and increasing their chances of survival. Researchers have found similar positive effects of grandmothers among Hungarian gypsies and populations in India and Africa. In rural Gambia, in fact, anthropologists found that the presence of a grandmother improves a child's prospects for survival much more than the presence of a father. In other words, women at menopause, the world over, have the option to embrace the life-sustaining role of grandmother, too. Now what do I do? A century ago, menopause was relatively rare. Even in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the average age of death for women in the United States was 49, 2 years before the typical woman ends her menstrual cycle. Women in the United States can now expect to live many decades after their periods stop. Science, however, hasn't fully caught up with this change in demographics. Our knowledge about menopause is relatively new and incomplete, though it's advancing rapidly as large populations of women are moving through this once rare transition. 45 million American women are now between ages 40 and 60. Planning for the many years after menopause is historically a new option for women. Being able to visualize exciting projects of their own choosing can be one of the most delightful parts of women's lives in the new century. They may have attained personal and economic power by this time. They may have a broad knowledge base, and for the first time in their lives, they may have more exciting options than they ever imagined possible. One scientist friend of mine, Cynthia Kenyon, an expert in aging, believes that in the future, women will likely live to be more than 120, a lot of years to imagine. For Sylvia, imagining her postmenopausal years meant rediscovering Robert. When she came to see me again 2 years after she and Robert broke up, she told me that after she got back to the girl she once was, felt the joy of rediscovering who she really was, and had dated enough disillusioning older men, she realized she missed Robert. He was the only one she could talk to about certain things, including their wonderful children. One day, he invited her to dinner, and she decided to accept. They met at a romantic restaurant, talked calmly about what had gone wrong, and ended up apologizing for the unhappiness they had caused each other. They also had new experiences to share: her job, her painting, his new interest in antiques, and even their funny adventures in dating. Over time, they rediscovered their friendship and respect for each other, and realized that they had already found their soulmates. They just needed to rewrite the contract. The mature female brain is still relatively unknown territory, but it's a wide open place for women to discover, create, contribute, and lead in positive ways for future generations, and maybe even have the most fun years of their lives. The postmenopausal years can be a time for both men and women to redefine their relationships and roles and take on new challenges and adventures independently and together. I know for myself that having raised my son, discovered passion in my work, and finally having found my soulmate makes me feel very grateful for my life. The struggles along the way have certainly been painful as well, but they have also been my greatest teachers. The reason I wrote this book was to share my knowledge about the inner workings of the female brain with other women who are traveling their own similar paths, trying to be true to themselves and understand how their innate biology affects their reality. I know it would have helped me to know more about what my brain was doing during many of the craziest times in my life. At each step of the way, we can better understand our world if we have a vision of what our brains are doing. Learning how to harness the female brain power we have will help each of us become the woman we ought to be. As a postmenopausal woman, I find myself excited and more determined than ever to try to make a difference in the lives of the girls and women I touch. Of course, I still can't see around the corner for myself, but the many decades ahead seem full of hope, passion, and outward momentum. I hope this map will help guide you through the incredible journey of the female brain. Epilogue. The future of the female brain. If I had to impart one lesson to women that I learned through writing this book, it would be that understanding our innate biology empowers us to better plan our future. Now that so many women have gained control over their fertility and achieved economic independence, we can create a blueprint for the road ahead. That means making revolutionary changes in society and our personal choices of partners, careers, and the timing of our children. Since women are now taking their 20s to get educated and establish their careers, more career women are pushing the boundaries of their biological clocks and having children in their mid to late 30s, even early 40s. A large percentage of my residents in their mid-30s haven't yet found the men with whom they want to start families because they have been so busy building their careers. This doesn't mean that women have made bad choices. It means that the phases of women's lives have drastically expanded. In early modern Europe, women became fertile at the age of 16 or 17 and had all their children by the time they were in their late 20s. Now, by the time the mommy brain takes over, women are fully entrenched in careers, and that means an inevitable tug-of-war because of overloaded brain circuits. Then women find themselves facing the ups and downs of perimenopause and menopause with toddlers and preschoolers running around the house. At the same time, they are busy managing careers. If a woman hasn't come to see me in her mid-30s to talk about the challenges of her fertility and career, then she will come in her mid-40s saying that she doesn't have time for perimenopause. She can't afford to lose her memory and focus from moods that make her miserable because her hormones are out of sync. What does all this mean in terms of women's innate brain biology? It doesn't mean that women should get off the path of motherhood combined with career. It just means they may benefit from getting a glimpse of all the balls they will need to juggle starting in their teen years. Obviously, there's no way that any of us can see around the corners in our lives and anticipate every type of support we will need. Understanding what is happening in our brains at each phase, however, is an important first step in controlling our destiny. Our modern challenge is to help society better support our natural female abilities and needs. My intentions for this book were to help women through the various shifts in their lives. Shifts so big they actually create changes in a woman's perception of reality, her values, and what she pays attention to. If we can understand how our lives are shaped by our brain chemistry, then maybe we can better see the road ahead. It's important to visualize and plan for what's coming. I hope this book has made a contribution to the mapping of the female reality. There are those who wish there were no differences between men and women. In the 1970s at the University of California, Berkeley, the buzzword among young women was mandatory unisex, which meant that it was politically incorrect even to mention sex difference. There are still those who believe that for women to become equal, unisex must be the norm. The biological reality, however, is that there is no unisex brain. The fear of discrimination based on difference runs deep, and for many years, assumptions about sex differences went scientifically unexamined for fear that women wouldn't be able to claim equality with men. But pretending that women and men are the same, while doing a disservice to both men and women, ultimately hurts women. Perpetuating the myth of the male norm means ignoring women's real biological differences in severity, susceptibility, and treatment of disease. It also ignores the different ways that they process thoughts and therefore perceive what is important. Assuming the male norm also means undervaluing the powerful, sex-specific strengths and talents of the female brain. Until now, women have had to do most of the cultural and linguistic accommodating in the work world. We have been fighting to adapt to a man's world. After all, women's brains are wired to be good at changing. I hope this book has been a guide for us, our husbands, fathers, sons, male colleagues, and friends, to the minds and biobehavior of women. Perhaps this information will help men begin adapting to our world. Almost every woman I've seen in my office, when asked what would be her top three wishes if her fairy godmother could wave her magic wand and grant them, says, "Joy in my life, a fulfilling relationship, and less stress with more personal time." Our modern life, the double shift of career and primary responsibility for the household and family, has made these goals particularly difficult to achieve. We are stressed out by this arrangement, and our leading cause of depression and anxiety is stress. One of the great mysteries of our lives is why we as women are so devoted to this current social contract, which often operates against the natural wiring of our female brains and biological reality. During the 1990s and the early part of this millennium, a new set of scientific facts and ideas about the female brain has been unfolding. These biological truths have become a powerful stimulus for the reconsideration of a woman's social contract. In writing this book, I have struggled with two voices in my head. One is the scientific truth. The other is political correctness. I have chosen to emphasize scientific truth over political correctness, even though scientific truths may not always be welcome. I have met thousands of women during the years my clinic has been running. They have talked to me about the most intimate details of events in their childhoods, teen years, career decisions, choice of a mate, sex, motherhood, and menopause. While female brain wiring has not changed much in a million years, the modern challenges of the different phases of women's lives are remarkably different from those of our foremothers. Even though there are now proven scientific differences between men's and women's brains, this, in many ways, is the Periclean golden age for women. The age of Aristotle, Socrates, and Plato was the first time in Western history that men gained enough resources